The Takeaway is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation, whose transportation initiative is promoting equitable and sustainable development in communities across the country. More at rockfound.org. You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Memories will stir this weekend as we approach the 10th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 attacks. They've been stirred by our staff that's assembled an archive of stories from first responders, from survivors, from victims' families. You can go to thetakeaway.org and look for Generation 9/11. But here's another story, and it's quite unique. Andrew Card, you'll remember, is a former chief of staff for George W. Bush. He was the man who on that day, on that morning, in a Florida elementary school classroom, was the person to tell the president that a plane had hit the World Trade Center. Bush was seated in front of a classroom of children watching them read My Pet Goat. It's an image that is a part of history now. Card leaned over the president, tell him the news, and President Bush sat there calmly for 7 minutes. The BBC's Mark Mardell spoke with Andrew Card about that day.
Well, as we were heading from the resort over to this elementary school, the Emma E. Booker School in Sarasota, Florida, there was a buzz in the air, and I remember two people in particular, one being Karl Rove, the other one being Dan Bartlett, kind of asking a question, anybody hear about a plane crash in New York City? But then very shortly after that, the president was standing by the door to the classroom with the principal of the school and myself, and the lead person from the Situation Room staff, the National Security Council staff, came up to us and said, it appears a small twin-engine prop plane crashed into one of the towers at the World Trade Center in New York City.
So your first thought is it's an accident?
We thought that it was a horrible accident. The pilot had had a heart attack or something. And then the principal opened the door to the classroom. And the president went in with the principal, and the door shut. And that same staffer from the Situation Room came to me and said, sir, it appears it was not a small twin-engine prop plane. It was a commercial jetliner. And my mind flashed to the fear that must have been in the passenger's mind. I mean, they had to know the plane wasn't gaining altitude, but that's what my mind flashed to. But that was only a nanosecond because that same staffer came back to me and said, oh, my gosh, a second plane hit the other tower at the World Trade Center. And believe it or not, my first thought was UBL, Osama bin Laden. And I knew that I had to tell the president, even though that's one of the difficult tasks that a chief of staff has. Does the president need to know? This one was easy to answer. Yes, the president needed to know.
There's no hesitation. You didn't think, well, we can leave him 7 minutes till he gets off stage.
No, I honestly thought that he had to know because this was not, it was not a coincidence. It couldn't have been an accident. And so I made a decision to pass on two facts and make one relatively obvious editorial comment. And I wanted to do nothing to invite a question or start a dialogue. I opened the door to the classroom, and then there was a break in the conversation in the front of the classroom where the teacher was then speaking to the students. And I walked up to the president and leaned over and whispered into his right ear, a second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack. And the president did not move from his seat. I opened the door and left. I was really glad he stayed in the classroom and did what he did.
Some people thought that was very odd.
Well, I thought it was right. Number one, he did nothing to introduce fear to those very young students. They were second graders. He did nothing to demonstrate fear to the media that would have translated it to the satisfaction of the terrorists all around the world.
And so when he left the children, he continued reading, but then obviously left. I presume all hell was let loose then.
The first thing he said was, get the FBI director on the phone. And we could say, here he is, sir. And then I tried to be cool, calm, and collected, and meeting his needs rather than responding emotionally to the challenge of the day. He was anxious to find out where he was going. He wanted to go back to Washington, D.C. I said, we have to get the lay of the land. I was talking with the Secret Service. And then he went and he addressed the public that was in the other room. And we then went very quickly out to the motorcade, drove quite quickly to the airport with Air Force One. The engines had already started, which is unusual. Usually they don't start the engine until the president's already on the plane.
So did you know where you were going?
No, not until we got on the plane. We get on the plane. The president said he wanted to go back to Washington, D.C. The Secret Service is telling me absolutely not. And the pilot is telling me absolutely not. He didn't know if Air Force One was going to be safe landing at Andrews Air Force Base. By the way, Air Force One took off at an extremely steep incline, flew to 48,000 feet, and flew in a serpentine way, waiting for fighter jets to catch up to us to protect us, as we're debating where to go. And the president is arguing that he wanted to go back to Washington, and I'm right in the middle.
So there was a bit of an argument with you.
Oh, we had yes. He was quite firm with me, and I was quite firm back to him. But, yeah, it was uncomfortable, actually.
There was a lot of criticism, or some criticism, of the president for not going back to the White House immediately. Did you make the right decision?
Absolutely. The fog of war is real. People didn't know if there were other attacks coming. We didn't know how safe Washington, D.C. was. And, in fact, there had been some misinformation that Air Force One itself was a target. So I think we made the right decision to... Based on the advice and counsel from both the Secret Service and the military, to wait to understand more about the nature of the attacks on America.
Before the day ended, or perhaps as you were going to bed, what were your thoughts that night?
That the world had changed. My life as Chief of Staff had changed. First of all, my goal as the President's Chief of Staff was not to be known. I wanted to be the Chief of Staff where no one knew his name. When I whispered in the President's ear, I didn't realize that that would become the dominant picture of the day, other than the fact that the planes were hitting towers in New York City and the Pentagon. So I was not looking to give up my anonymity. And I also knew that it changed forever the responsibilities that President Bush would be known for during his tenure as president, that it wasn't going to be about leaving no child behind or cutting taxes or building a way out of a recession that he had inherited. It was going to be about how he responded to an attack on our homeland. So, yes, it was a very significant day. It changed my life. It changed the president's life. It changed America's life. And quite frankly, it changed the world.
The voice there of Andrew Card, former chief of staff for George W. Bush, the first person to inform the president that the Twin Towers in New York were under attack on September 11th. He spoke with our partner, the BBC. We want you to share your own reflection, how the 9/11 attacks changed your life 10 years later. Use the Takeaway iPhone app, take a picture of a local memorial, interview a loved one about their memories, and share all that with us. Go to the takeaway.org, or you can download the app on iTunes.